Hi, everyone. This is Lynn Rosen, and you have been listening to The Pursuit of Happiness here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. We are listening to some really happening music, really fun, exciting from all parts of the world. And Jadex is also here, a music artist in the studio, talking about music, talking about creativity. Which is great. This is a lot of fun. I love music, and I think it's a way everybody loves music. It's a universal way to experience ourselves and our emotions and our vitality and our excitement, our energy, whatever music you're into. We're playing different kinds of music today, but we're going to take a break, and I will also open up the phone lines if people want to call in at 212-209-2900, 212-209-2900. People can respond to the music. People can respond to what we've been talking about here today, which is creativity. Do you feel like you're accessing your own creativity and able to get that out for yourself or into the world if that's what you want to do? Whatever it is you're doing, music, writing, cooking, whatever it is, it doesn't matter, but that you are really expressing that part of yourself. And if not, you can also talk about that. 212-209-2900. You can call in, and we're going to take a break and come back.
WBAI is a niet-commerciële zender, gesponsord door
de luisteraars. E quando sono a New York, ascolto WBAI su 99.5 FM.
Nitwa Jacqueline Murekatete, ndi umureskapi wa genocide y'Abatutsi yabaye muri 1994 mu Rwanda. Murimo kumva
Kukatu Sambo of New York, as Vinengi Sulsham WBAI, Tivdesay.
Mi nombre è Elsa, anto sempre mi timi radio sintonizzana 99.5 FM WBAI.
What language do you speak when you call back home and talk to your grandmother or cousins? Join WBAI's ongoing community outreach and produce a station ID for us in your native tongue. You can contact the program coordinator, Michael G. Haskins, at wbaiannouncements@gmail.com. Let's celebrate each other.
TalkBack is your gathering place for the free and fair exchange of information and ideas heard here Monday through Thursday from 3 until 5 in the afternoon. I'm Hugh Hamilton. Join me as we explore the issues and events making news across the nation and around the world with expert guests, insightful analysis, and, of course, your comments, questions, and observations. That's TalkBack right here on WBAI New York.
Hey there, everyone. This is Lynn Rosen. You're listening to The Pursuit of Happiness. You can call in at 212-209-2900. That's 212-209-2900. Call in, respond to the topic, which is creativity and unleashing your creativity and music. We have Jadex here, music artist, if you want to ask him any questions or respond to what we're talking about today. Hi, caller. You're on the line.
Hello.
Yes. Hi, caller.
Good. I wanted to ask you, what was that article you were talking about?
Okay, there are two articles. One is The Art of Creativity. Goleman is the name. Daniel. D. Goleman, Daniel Goleman.
And Paul Kaufman.
Okay.
And Paul Kaufman.
And Paul Kaufman, yes.
It was originally published in Psychology Today.
There's another one.
It's called The Art of Creativity.
And then there's another one you could just check out, creatingminds.com. Creatingminds.com, and they have, I think, articles.
So that's the myths about creativity. That one comes from there.
And is the third one here?
No. So those are the two articles today. And do you have any comments or thoughts about creativity?
Yeah, I'd like to learn how to play music.
Play music. Well, maybe talk to Jadex about that.
Never too late, man.
Yeah.
Been struggling with the guitar, but
do you have a teacher?
No,
not that that's necessary.
I have a great record collection. I don't sound like my record collection, so it sounds like
you don't sound like your record collection.
Yeah.
Nobody sounds like his record collection.
Yeah,
I mean, that's a great goal.
For
but
a while. That's what they keep telling me. I hate sounding bad.
Everybody hates sounding bad. I mean, that's natural. Can you make time to work on it?
Yeah.
You can make time to work on it. And occasionally, like, it's not like you have to go take lessons every week, but for a lot of people, a little bit of studying with the right person could really, really help.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could get yourself on a track when you're where you're efficient, where you're growing, where you're getting better. You know, maybe get out there and interact a little bit with other musicians. I don't know what your background is, but you play, right? You just want to play better.
Yeah, I play bad, actually. But, I say it's bad, but I don't.
Is he being too critical, JDX?
I don't know. I haven't heard it. No, okay. I'm just kidding, man. Right. Everybody wants to play better. Every musician wants to play better. That's not. Every musician is inspired by his record collection and feels like I'll never be as good as those guys that I grew up listening to. That's everybody. But you know, if you can find some way to work on it, and yeah, I mean, you shouldn't get hung up about the way you play. You just as long as you're working on it, I think, man, that'll naturally build your confidence.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe if you. I'll be honest. I think that a good teacher at certain points can really help. A little bit of encouragement and a little bit of like, okay, man, here's what you really need to work on, because that can be hard to see.
Right.
Even if it's for a brief period.
All right. Sounds great.
Okay. Thank you.
All right.
Yeah. Good luck with that. I think we have another caller. Hi, caller. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
My name is Maria.
Hi, Maria.
And I wanted to share something about my own experience.
Yes.
I owe it to my public school teachers who were in all the levels of my education, especially from first grade all the way to high school, had the privilege of working with public school teachers who always integrated the arts.
Okay, that's great. Yeah.
And later on in life, when I... from the one that's the greatest challenge that I have to confront, which is the death of my first son, I immediately went back to that opportunity that they opened for me, and I started writing poetry, and it has been extremely healing in dealing with that loss. So I thank you to the presenter for sharing his insights on this matter, because it's a matter of life and death. Thank you very much.
Okay, you're welcome. Thanks for that comment.
That's a great experience. I'm really glad. And it is, I didn't understand what the loss was. I'm sorry, I didn't.
Okay, hear, okay. I think she's up, yeah.
But yeah, and that's great. And it's also, listen, it's also great that you had the arts incorporated into your public school curriculum. That is not something that anybody, no matter where you're from, can take for granted anymore. But that is a great thing that you had that. And I think we should have that more.
Yeah, but there's other resources, too, if you can't get that in your schools, right?
We should be getting it in the schools, but yeah, there are other resources.
Should. Yeah, of course
it should be in the schools.
Yes, it should be.
Sorry, but...
yeah. All right, well, thanks for calling in. It is very healing for certain people, creativity, or it could be a personal thing, or it could be just reaching out in the world or just touching, you know... things in yourself, which is great.
I had music in the schools. I don't know what I would have done without that. I really don't.
Yeah, right.
I don't.
Right, yeah. All right, so we're going to talk, get into some more music now.
Okay, all right, yeah, this is track number 3, and this is Miles Davis. The track is called What I Say. And again, what's interesting about this is jazz coming back to a bottom part. Like, when I say bottom, I mean like the bass and drums. That is closer to the James Brown and the funk, and it's closer to dance-oriented music. You can hear this on a lot of his electric music. He was coming back to jazz being a dance-oriented form, but in a really different way.
Okay. Sounds great. Hi, everyone. This is Lynn Rosen. You're listening to The Pursuit of Happiness, and I am here with Jadex, music artist, and we're listening to all sorts of exciting music and talking about creativity. And we may take another call, but you can call in if you want at 212-209-2900. Okay, so do we have a caller on the line? Or?
Yes, hello?
Yeah. Hi, caller. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
Because what you said really sparked off some thoughts in me, how there should be creativity and music in the schools.
Yes.
I'm a New York City high school music teacher.
Yes.
In Brooklyn. And I'd like to make people aware that all the high school music programs have been dropped. That 2 years ago or 3 years ago was the last time that Pomp and Circumstance was played by a live band.
Wow. That's a sad thing to hear.
Dramatically removed the music departments from schools by not rehiring teachers that retired or left for whatever reason. They've made me what's called an ATR, which stands for Absent Teacher Reserve.
Okay.
Instead of teaching music, they have me going around to different schools teaching anything else but music in lieu of a teacher that might have not shown up for the beginning of the school year or that might have been absent. And it's soul-killing for me. It's ruining my creativity. But it's also the students that go to school for music that get an intrinsic value of music.
Yes.
From going to school. They're missing out on this. A whole population of great musicians are being eliminated. They're not giving the opportunity.
Ugh.
Wow. You want to comment on that, Jada?
Yeah, I mean, this is a real problem with our education system. This is terrible. Like I said, I was lucky to have it. Your students were lucky enough to have you for a while. This is a systematic thing. Yeah, right. Some people can maybe get it in an enrichment program, but that's very much dependent on the income level of your parents. Whereas a good program in a public school is not. You make an excellent point. How many talented young musicians are never going to know that they were talented musicians or that they could have done something? By the way, this goes for math and science, too, which is another horribly underserved area in our system. But a lot of people who never have the chance to know that they could have been great in music, they're never going to know that music could have made a real difference in their lives because of the fact that it's cut. That sounds really horrible what you're doing. It's great that you were able to do what you did, because I mean, it's really important to have people like you. It's really important to have music in the schools. I don't know, as a society, it just seems like we have a hard time getting our act together about this, about, you know, educating our kids and giving them everything that they need. So
we need to make people aware of the situation. Unless I say this to people, the parents don't know. The school kids themselves don't know. In fact, that they go to a school that's labeled performing arts, and there is no music or dance or art programs in those schools. They're misled.
Well, that should be illegal.
That sounds
terrible.
I'm surprised at that. So there are schools.
It should be illegal.
Designated like they're performing, supposed to be performing arts schools, and then there's not.
Of any, the instruments are laying locked up in a closet, rusting.
Wow.
Dusty.
Oh my goodness! I'm really surprised
really
to hear that.
I want to bring this point out, and I want people to be aware of it.
Yes, I'm so glad you did. I'm so glad you called in.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you.
And try to, I mean, for yourself, you know, when you say that soul destroying, which is understandable, maybe to, I don't know, access something else for yourself, a way to keep yourself alive and going.
Really, because I went to the school that I went to. I can mention it if that's okay with you.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, sure.
Dewey High School had five music teachers. When I went to the school in 1974 to 1978, when I started teaching there again in my alma mater, there were five music classes. The principal was even one of the teachers of music who taught guitar. Systematically, they eliminated the department by not rehiring teachers that had retired or passed away or moved on to other schools. That down to two teachers, one of them was a dean, and then I was excessed. And the school, when they sent me back there in September, because I had been off the staff selection system, I had been not accessed, they sent me away and said, the principal there said, we have no longer a music department at all, you cannot work here.
Wow.
They sent me back into an ATR pool in a situation where I'm not teaching music. I'm teaching, if you can believe it, out of license, EMT, and the students are the ones that are suffering. The students absolutely, when you go to talk about a school like Erasmus that produced famous musicians.
Yeah.
And you talk about a school like Wingate or South Shore or John Dewey, all which had thriving music departments.
Is that you?
Oh, okay.
Which had thriving music departments at the time, you know, in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s, and produced talented, very talented musicians, too numerous to mention. Those, like you said, those students will never see their dreams or be able to have the chance to just to have to play music creatively.
Yeah.
Just fun for the intrinsic balance.
Well, I'm so glad you called in and mentioned that, so we're aware of it. A little shocked by that, but
this is dear to my heart. I don't know. I was also lucky enough to have some things that were privately organized outside of the schools.
But
I
think
know
we can
feasible.
Look at also, yeah, maybe just like you know, on a hopeful side, maybe we can, if with more consciousness about this and more awareness about this, maybe we can, you know, people can try to put out things and do more things for kids. Events or programs, something. Maybe, I don't know, if there's a way to do that or a way to, you know, bring more awareness and then nonprofit organizations doing things or, you know.
You know, something. It's interesting. I've done clinics. I just did a clinic at Sam Ash in Brooklyn, and the primary educator of music is the church.
Yeah.
All the kids who can play instruments learn in the church.
Yeah.
And they play in the church.
Yeah. There's some great,
now that's
talented,
great
young,
also,
young musicians,
but it really
too.
Should be in the schools because not everyone goes to a church. I don't know. Not everyone might be Christian or whatever. They don't go to a church, so they don't have that opportunity.
Right. So other ways to,
definitely
to
in the schools,
that.
But yeah.
Okay.
Thanks for bringing that to our attention. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So we're going to listen to some more music, right?
Yes, we're going to kind of go back to our theme here. We're going to hear some stuff from the same period, United States and Africa, and a little bit of the back and forth between. In this case, this is kind of R&B starting to turn into disco, and then it's a track called "Runaway Love" by Linda Clifford, and then we're going to go to. Not actually sure where he's from. This musician was born in the Sierra Leone, but he had a career that he performed a lot in Nigeria, so I can't pin him down. Western Africa, right? Western part of Africa, same part as Fela. We're going to hear a track of his called Heavy, Heavy, Heavy. So Runaway Love and Heavy, 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 and you can hear the influence of jazz, but again, the back and forth between the United States and Africa during this period of Afrobeat and, yeah.
Okay.
So number 5, Runaway Love.
Yes.
Great track.
With my feelings, you keep messing around, playing with my heart.
You were just listening to Runaway Love, Linda Clifford. I think she has an amazing voice, very soulful. That's a really great song. This is Lynn Rosen. You've been listening to The Pursuit of Happiness here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. I've been talking with Jadex, a music artist.
That's me.
Yes, who's been talking about different kinds of music. And you can also check him out live. He will be playing again October 12th at 9 o'clock p.m. at Otto Shrunken Head on East 14th Street. Will be the next live gig, and it's going to be more like a dance party and a lot of fun. Right, Jadex?
Yeah, that's right. We got a new musician in the band, so playing electronics and all kinds of electronic sounds and dance sounds, so I'm really excited.
Yeah, so seeing like dancers and just like a big party.
Yeah, the thing I was talking about, the dancing, the crowd, absolutely.
Yes, okay, so that's Otto's Shrunken Head, October 12th at 9 o'clock p.m. I believe it's on
Friday, October 12th, yeah.
Friday, October 12th, yes, East 14th Street. And as always, you can check me out, the website, if you want to check it out, at lynnrosen.com, lynnrosen.com. And we've been talking about, you know, creativity and actualizing yourself and some of the things that stand in the way. Some people have called in about how creativity has been great. Some people have been cut off from it temporarily. But we always have to fight to get it back and to stay connected to it in some way. And to stay connected to that vitality. True, Jadex?
That's true. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think we can. And I think also having people in your life that really support you and bring that out in you and bring out that creative, vital spirit is really important. Having that support, having that encouragement, and making it a connecting kind of experience, like a bigger experience also.
Yes.
Is great. So we'll just... tune out and listen to some music. Thanks so much for listening to The Pursuit of Happiness here today. And as always, you can email me if you have any questions, thoughts, or comments at lynnros7@aol.com. I love responding to your emails. This is a very, very thoughtful audience, very bright, very thoughtful, interesting audience, which is I really appreciate. Okay, so take care.
Heavy, heavy, heavy.
Corporations didn't want to pay fair wages. They didn't want to deal with unions. They didn't want to pay taxes. And so they rigged the system to essentially permit themselves to move their operations overseas, keep their money overseas, and abandon the country.
Days of Destruction, Days of Revolt with Chris Hedges. Monday, October 15th, 2012, at the New York Society for Ethical Culture, 2 West 64th Street at Central Park West, with a reception at 6 p.m., followed by a talk at 7:30. Tickets for reception include a book and the talk. The general admission is offered on a sliding scale. For more information about the Chris Hedges Benefit event to support WBAI, go to WBAI.org.
Join us for the 15th annual Real Sisters of the Diaspora Film Festival on October 13th and 14th, featuring narratives, docs, and shorts by women filmmakers of color from across the world. There's a film editing workshop with the great Sam Pollard, an industry chat with honoree Daphne Maxwell Reed, a tribute to Black Side Inc., the Brooklyn premiere of Soul Food Junkies, an award ceremony hosted by Terry Williams, and more. It's at the Kumble Theater on the LIU Brooklyn campus, Flatbush Avenue and DeKalb Avenues in Brooklyn. For information, visit realsisters.org. That's R-E-E-L, sisters, with an S, dot org. Or call 347-534-3304. Hope to see you there.
Hi, my name is Ilse, and I always have my radio tuned to 99.5 FM WBAI. When I visit my family in Paramaribo, Suriname, I listen on the web at wbai.org. Odi, mining na Ilse. And alayuri mi up mi kon krudosu tapuneji tenti naneji puntfeifi FM WBAI. Any one thing mi fsiti mi family na Paramaribo, Suriname o Bakakonde, mi e archi wbai.org via internet.
Dance with me. Lleve con sal. This is WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web. I'm Michael G. Haskins. As you can tell, I'm having a pretty good time this afternoon, in a pretty good mood. Coming up next at 2 p.m., the CCCP, the Monthly Laughing Nightmare. That'll be coming up in just a minute or so. And then Talk Back with Hugh Hamilton at 3 o'clock. There's going to be jamming, no G, jamming in Harlem. Broadway comes uptown. That's right. Broadway comes uptown with a top-flight cast of performing artists, actors, and musicians. Some of the best and brightest stars on Broadway in a not-to-be-missed rollicking review. Sounds like it's going to be a roast, but it's not. It's not. Wonderful performers are literally responding to a higher calling. They're using their talents to help raise funds to repair and preserve the neo-Gothic St. James Presbyterian Church, home of one of the oldest Presbyterian congregations in Manhattan. It's 117 years old and counting, including many performing artists presented by the Men of St. James Presbyterian Church. It'll be taking place on October 20th. October 20th, there's two shows, one at 1 p.m. and one at 4:30 p.m. The St. James Presbyterian Church is located at 409 West 141st Street at St. Nicholas Avenue in Harlem. For more information, call 212-470-9837. It's 2 p.m. Coming up next, the CCCP.
What seems to be the trouble, soldier? You look a little bit worried.
Well, I am, Chaplain. Just a little bit.
Actually, there's no need to be worried, as the Army has taken all of the necessary precautions to see that we're perfectly safe here.
Sir, have you ever been out at one of these shops before?
Yes, I've had the opportunity to see a number of the atomic tests. I feel that as a chaplain, it is my responsibility to be with my men.
What's it like, Chaplain?
First of all, one sees a very, very bright light, followed by a shock wave, and then you hear the sound of the blast, and then it seems as though there's a minor earthquake. And then you look up and you see the fireball as it ascends up into the heaven. It's a wonderful sight to behold.
eagle soar like she's never soared before. From rocky coast to golden shore, let the mighty eagle soar, soar with healing in her wings, as the land beneath her sings. Only God, no other king. Let the mighty eagle soar. This country's far too young to die.
Welcome to the Christmas Coup Comedy Players. That's a CCCP with David Dozier, John McDonough, Scooter, Otis McClay, Mike Squire, Paul Fisher, Tony Hendra and the crew from the final edition, The Capitol Steps, Jim Turr of Blue Canyon Satire, Stacey Davis, Mark Babawi, the great Will Durst, me, Janet Coleman, and Randy Credico as the 43rd President of the United States. Put on your magic underwear and listen to the show. Here we go.
In the dews, the damps, the watchfires of a nation torn by war. Oh, she's far too young to die. You can see it in her eye. She's not yet begun to fly. It's time to let the mighty eagle soar. Let the eagle soar.
BBC World Service.
This is Grant Freely for BBC News. An outrageous video produced by the notorious Terry Jones allegedly sparked the attack on the American embassy in Libya on Tuesday, Greenwich Mean Time. The BBC was able to locate the Terry Jones video on YouTube. Here is an excerpt.
What makes you think she's a witch?
Well, she turned me into a newt.
A newt?
I got better.
Burn already!
Burn!
That didn't sound very Muslim.
BBC World Service.
From the lovely Gaffa Minute Room of the Gdansk Hotel on the beautiful west bank of London's fashionable West End, an old favorite, surely you'll remember.
Mitt Romney, you're gonna lose it by a mile. It's not your substance, it's your style, I'd say.
Thank you, thank you.
You governed pretty well there. You invented Obamacare. But the good that you did, now you must repudiate. Because those right-wing crazies you're trying hard to win, it's a fantasy they're in, and you know it. You're selling your soul to appeal to those who don't think that birth certificate's real, and that his Christian faith is some Muslim deal. Mitt Romney, shame on you. And then there's the Supreme Court. You say your favorite justices are Roberts, Thomas, Alito, and Scalia. The Citizens United guys, yeah! Let's give the little vote we've got left to corporations and anonymous billionaires. They know what's best for us, oh yeah! Sure, corporations are people, and people who believe that are sheeple. And I guess that includes you. So dude, you are insane! Two tax rates, 14% for you. An offshore account or two for your stash. So Obama, you
say is a socialist, an anti-capitalist. He took the Detroit risk, Mitt Romney, which you said should be allowed to die along with all those jobs. Yeah, that's the kind of vision and business expertise we need, oh yeah. And a gun in every hand, and in each hand, for those special moments when you're mad as hell and, well, you just wish you had a gun handy. All right. Thank you. Thank you.
Tonight, we present the Romney Michiguts, wherein we discover just how nuts the bland, boring bugger of the blue-collar class really is.
Welcome to a segment we call Mitt Romney Will Say Literally Anything. It's the show where we call up Republican presidential candidate Mitt Romney with questions that simply call for a normal human response. Let's see what he does.
Hello?
Governor Romney, this is Tony Hendro with Mitt Romney Will Say Literally Anything.
I know why you're calling, Tony. You're outraged that President Obama apologized to Bin Laden. And I am in whole agreement with you.
When did he do that?
What did you say? Your signal is breaking up.
Never mind. I just wanted to ask you if you'd had a chance to see any movies while you're on the campaign trail.
Well, sure. I've seen that new Batman movie with the Bat Man, who's a bat.
The Dark Knight Rises.
Sure, I saw that one too. You know, Obama tried to stop production of that movie because it created jobs. I'll tell you the movie I didn't see, though, the one Obama directed that caused those riots in Libya.
The president made that?
Oh, yes. Absolutely. It's his second movie. In his first movie, he goes back in time and apologizes to Hitler.
Well, Governor, I know you're busy, so we'll let you go. Any last words for us?
I ended apartheid.
Good for you. Have a great night.
I will certainly try.
Clint Eastwood was debating an empty chair. No guesses as to who was winning. But if you think that that was the strangest thing, well, that was only the beginning. 'Cause earlier that week we had a very fat man tell us how to make government lean. He talked about his dad and the GI Bill. And you could tell that he was rather mean. And when Romney took the stage and walked through the hall, shaking everybody's hand, oh, here was the Republican savior who last year they couldn't stand. He repeated all the lies that had come before about apology tours and Medicare. He gave vague pronouncements of nothingness. Empty chair. Oh, here's how desperate the Republican Party is. Their idea man, Ryan, lies through his teeth. To scrape the surface of what Romney and Ryan want, you'll find the face of George Bush underneath. And that was one face that you didn't see in Tampa, 'cause who wants to revisit that mess? The only shot they have is to lie and lie and try to get some votes suppressed. Oh, Clint Eastwood debating an empty chair. No guesses as to who was winning. But if you think that was the strangest thing, well, that was only the beginning.
And now, a short campaign 2012 fable. The Ryan, the Mitt, and the wardrobe.
We're a full generation apart, Governor Romney and I. And in some ways we're different. There are the songs in his iPod, which I've heard on the campaign bus. And I've heard it on many hotel elevators.
Love my shirt. My shirt is so comfortably lovely.
Elsa got me one of these 3-packs of shirts the other day from Costco. And they're very nice shirts.
The Kirkland shirts, he's wearing them all the time now. I'm like, hey, that shirt looks pretty good. I got it at Costco.
But here's the thing about the Costco story. We built our company in a place where anyone can make it with hard work, a little luck, and a little help from their neighbors and their country. I'm here tonight because Costco's story is the American story. Because it's a story that President Obama is helping millions of dreamers and doers to write anew for themselves.
This has been a short campaign 2012 fable. The Ryan, the Mitt, and the Wardrobe.
Mitt Romney here again, and I'm here with my lovely wife, Anne, to address a problem we seem to be having with you, the American people, and that people don't seem to think that I identify with the common man, but I'm here to reassure all Americans that I'm just an average guy like everybody else. I put my pants on the same as you every day.
That's right. The butler holds them, and Mitt puts one leg at a time into said trousers, just like everybody else.
We're not helping, honey. Now look, we're going to have to find a way with identifying with that other 99%, because I think, you know, unfortunately, we're going to need some of their votes, you know what I mean? So look, let's try this again from the top, all right? Here we go.
Right.
Now what does the middle class do, who make just a million or two?
The man who might be facing so much debt that he screams.
The fans of NASCAR racing whose friends don't own teams.
They must have some bag of tricks if their private jet just seats six. However do they manage to fully staff their yacht? Oh, what do simple folk do? We do not.
I have often talked while I'm out and about with folks who all get by with clever ways. See, when their budget's tight, they simply do without, then ask their trust fund for a modest raise. And that's what simple folk do every day.
Go without?
So they say.
What else do the simple folk do? With one Cadillac and not two. The poor guy who's not seeing his portfolio grow.
Instead of going skiing at Vail, they're at Stowe.
Yuck! What if their fortune is small?
They'll drink Dom instead of Crystal.
Why, if I needed money, I'd sell a few Van Goghs.
Joes. Now this is a great land where simple folk can soon dream a little dream, I've heard them say.
Even you, the billionaire, son of a mere tycoon, can hope to be the president someday. And that's what simple folk do, I should say.
Are you calling me simple?
I should say.
All right, now look. What should the middle class do?
They should cast their votes all for you.
Then we'd be in the White House.
A quite small house for you.
Yes, but see, that's downsizing.
And
that's what simple folks do.
Hey guys, Will Durst here to say I'm worried about Mitt Romney. Seriously, the guy may just be running the worst campaign ever. And yes, that includes the McDLT, print ads for organic hemp underwear, and France in 39. Not to mention McCain-Palin in 08, which currently holds the gold standard for lousy campaigns. Willard has taken bad to a whole new level. Bad like a dumpster behind a fish market during a sanitation strike. Bad. Bad like a $3 Dark Knight Rises DVD bought off a Times Square cardboard table with Albanian subtitles. Bad. Bad like Todd Akin at a NARAL benefit. Bad. And every time the former governor of Massachusetts opens his mouth, it gets worse. He's tone-deaf, tongue-tied, logically impaired, and as approachable as a nearsighted porcupine in heat. The anti-Ray Romano. Nobody loves Mitt. So uncomfortable around real people. You could practically hear him whisper icky, icky, icky under his breath while shaking hands at rallies. You know there's an aide with a bottle of Purell hand sanitizer waiting for him on the bus. Maybe even a 55-gallon drum connected to a shower head. Romney got caught on a secret video saying he wasn't going to concern himself with 47% of America because they were moochers and malingerers, which has depressed his base because, hell, 47%, that's more than half. One major problem with insulting 47% of the public is that at least 58% of us worry we're part of that 47%, and you know 105% of America believes that. They do. Bet you $10,000. Now he's trying to reset his campaign. The Etch-A-Sketch has been turned upside down and prepare to be shaken. Problem is, you keep rebooting something as stiff as Mitt and it starts short-circuiting all over the place. Romney 8.0, better than Romney 7.0, now with desperation. Maybe it's the extra-large silver spoon in his mouth that keeps him from seeing the view from the middle class. Can't understand why they don't pull themselves up by the bootstraps like he did when his daddy loaned him his first million. Now, with the debate still to come, there's plenty of time to turn this race around, but this far in, it's like turning the Titanic after hitting the iceberg, and the helm is underwater. Face it, if Bain Capital were running Mitt's campaign right now, they'd close it down, fire him, and hire some Chinese guy to do it better and cheaper. For the CCCP, I'm Will Durst.
Yes, Michelle?
Are you busy?
Just a little debate prep, Michelle.
Oh.
What's up?
It's time to pick the next 100 lucky people who have won a dinner with the president.
All right, Michelle. Let me give the raffle drum a couple of turns.
You are always so fair.
Yeah, and honest, Michelle.
Fair and honest.
And here are the lucky winners.
Wow, you can grab 100 raffle tickets with one hand.
It takes practice, but I'm pretty good at it now.
And the voters sure love those presidential dinners.
Yeah. I better get back to debate prep, Michelle.
Oh, but before you do, Barack, you could pick the 100 winners of Shoot a Foul Shot with the President.
Oh, okay. Better spin the raffle drum again.
This is democracy in action, mixed with a little socialism.
I believe in the redistribution of lottery tickets. And here are the lucky Shoot a Foul Shot contest winners.
Oh, they will be so happy, Barack.
Yeah.
And shooting foul shots does so much to combat childhood obesity.
I'm glad to help.
And I know you want to get back to debate prep, Barack.
It's important that I prepare.
That's why you will want to spin the raffle drum once more to pick the 100 winners of the Stop Bothering the President and Let Him Get Some Work Done contest.
I don't have to spin the raffle drum for that one, Michelle. Anyone who bought a ticket to Stop Bothering the President is an automatic winner.
I love a contest where everybody wins.
Thank you.
chirpy news chick.
And I'm Stone White.
Reporting for MSDNC from the Democratic National Convention. We're having a great time.
There's lots of balloons.
It's very exciting.
Very colorful.
And signs. Did you hear Michelle last night? Oh, she was wonderful. And her dress, she's so beautiful.
Well, I missed it. I was with the Wall Street guys.
Oh, it sends a tingle up my leg.
We were doing that, too. You should have stopped by.
Oh, Stone, stop that. Let go of me. I think the next speaker's coming up. I wonder what she'll say.
I'm sure it'll be very inspirational.
What the hell?
What?
Scootle, what are you doing back there?
What?
That's not a convention sound bed. What are you?
Oh, I'm sorry. I think I mixed up.
Me that. You can't play war sounds in the middle of
those aren't war sounds.
Broadcast.
That was from Oakland, California.
Don't give me that. You can't play war sounds in the middle of a broadcast. I know what you're up to. Listen, you little piece of crap. This isn't that junk you used to play on Pacifica Radio. This is a professional broadcast.
Yeah, and you sound like you're narrating your children's birthday party.
I sound exactly like what I'm paid for.
I just thought some firearms would be appropriate for this party.
Shut up. Put the tracks back on and turn the mics up.
I didn't turn the mic up. Never mind. Okay. In 3, 2.
And I'm Chirpy News Chick with Stone White, enjoying every minute of the convention. We're anxiously awaiting the next speaker. There's a hush coming over the crowd. Oh, I'll wing your neck, you
no,
metal!
No,
oh, you're just go ahead.
No,
make
no,
my
scream like a little Afghanistan child. Oh yeah, you like it, don't you?
You're never working this town again. Do you know
come
who
on,
you're messing with, you punk?
Come on, come on,
make
come
my
on.
Day.
Come on, mama, make it like
real
it hurt. Make it like
funny
it hurt.
With your face off. No,
ooh, yeah,
no.
Baby.
Let me go. Let me out.
Scream
for me,
yeah.
Face off.
Scream like you mean it.
No, you.
Yeah, oh, hey, I got a rocket in my pocket.
You're a piece of steel.
You love it.
Just sit right back and you'll hear a tale of Mitt the candidate at the big fundraiser, $50,000 a plate. His mate was a budget-cutting man who lies when he opens his mouth. They thought that they'd win everywhere, especially the South. But speaking at the fundraiser, our Mitt, he had his fun. He said 47% of us were a bunch of lazy bums. His campaign's now adrift on the seas of an arrogant boast. If not for the money of the Koch brothers, his goose, it would be toast. He's got no professor, no Ginger or Marianne, just a millionaire and his wife, with his offshore accounts and tax files. Mitt Romney as Thurston Howell III there on Gilligan's Isle.
And now, with all the news about the news, around the news, underneath the news, here's perennial pundit Dirk Barfly.
That's Barfly. Hello, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all you trains in the air. This is news. It's been reported that the Romney campaign is having all kinds of problems. We've managed to sneak retro reporter Biff Bumstead into the secret cavern in North Dakota where the real Romney wranglers operate.
I'm hiding here behind this big rack of electronic equipment, but I have my highly directional mic with me. Let's point it at these technicians who are working on some kind of mannequin I can't see clearly.
I think it's the limit switch.
There's no limit switch on the random association function.
Well, there should be.
Just push the talk button.
Anne just loves her Cadillacs. She has 12, one for each house, and the horses. Thank God we get a tax deduction for the horses. Everyone should have horses.
Well, at least that whirring noise is gone before it talks.
Yeah, that could kind of give the whole thing away.
Can't we just remove the free association circuit altogether?
Yes, but then it wouldn't be able to have a random conversation with a supporter.
But what about a set of simple programmed responses?
You mean I'll have my staff get back to you on that?
That would be the safest thing.
The problem is that the secret fundraising programming is interfering with the stump speech circuit.
It can't be the programming. It's got to be the motherboard. Try the stump speech button.
Okay.
Of course we need to raise taxes, just not on me.
You see what I mean? That was a fundraising statement right in the middle of a stump speech.
You're saying it's my programming that's at fault? You sure it was the stump speech button?
I'll try it again. Stump speech button.
Most Americans are moochers. All they do is take, take, take. I'm a job creator. I create jobs in China.
I think we're in trouble.
We don't have time to fix it before the election.
We just have to hope it doesn't screw up too badly.
Okay. What about the other one?
The Paul Ryan? It was programmed in China. We don't have the code.
From behind the big rack of electronic equipment in the Romney Robot Lab, I'm Biff Bumstead.
What's that?
There's someone behind the big rack of electronic equipment.
Uh-oh.
We'll hand him over to Bill O'Reilly.
Jeez, I wish we had the budget to rescue him. So, with all the news about the news, around the news, underneath the news, I'm Dirt Barfley, always down there digging.
My little congressman, you're looking out for me. From your little corner office in Washington, D.C. But I think I'm getting lost now under all that cash. We need to label you so all your biggest donors get a sponsor patch. Wow, wow.
Morgan Stanley, SEIU, Exxon, Amgen, Act Blue, wow, wow. Aetna, Pfizer, UPS, AT&T, and Goldman Sachs.
Blue to attach every cotton picking sponsor patch. We gotta know who's coughing up now to figure out the game. You gotta recognize your donors for credit they can claim. Since their money and their influence, there's no way I can match. You gotta make it easy, let us see who's driving with a sponsor patch. Wow, wow.
General Electric and Citigroup, Lockheed, Boeing, Chevron too, Monsanto and the NEA, the Realtors and the MRA.
You don't think it rash to ask if you shouldn't wear a sponsor patch? Think about all that money, the pressure that it brings. You could change it, but you're busy with fundraising and other things. So throw me just a little phone now, a crumb that I can catch. Yeah, if you can't see that public campaign finance would give both you and me a better chance, why not at least take an honest stance and wear a sponsor patch? Wow, wow.
Sheet Metal Workers, America Votes, Federal Express, and the Club for Growth, Verizon, Pharma, Peabody Coal, United Health, plus the race
is never over, so thank your owners with a sponsor patch.
The Final Edition Radio Hour is proud to present Romney Antoinette by John Bridgeport Marshall, Episode 39.
Your Majesty, your latest scandal has gone viral.
Oh, no. Not a picture of my boobies.
No, that's Kate Middleton.
Middle class?
No, Middleton. Middle class is what you are trying to destroy.
Yes, I know. Although, I try to say it more elegantly than that.
This new scandal threatens to derail your campaign.
Is it about how I don't care about the poor?
No.
How I want to end Medicare?
No.
Medicaid?
No.
Is it about that dog thing?
No.
It's about whatever I said about Libya. I don't know what I actually said. I wasn't very elegant about it.
It's about how you said that 47% of the voters are victims who want the government to do everything for them and who don't pay income tax.
Oh, well, that's not right. I thought it was 48%.
Whatever it is, you can't ask a country to vote for you if you think half of them are bums.
I didn't say half. I said 47%. Now, get your facts straight. If there's one thing I know, it's percentages. How do you think I get away with not paying my taxes?
That's just it, sir. You're accusing the American people of doing what you yourself do.
So what's the problem? Is it because I have a car elevator?
No, that's not it.
Because I can get rid of it. I mean, I can't, but I'll say I will. I'll just have to say it elegantly.
Even conservatives are deserting you.
Do I need them?
They're your base.
I thought that was in the Cayman Islands.
That's your tax base. I'm talking about your political base.
Oh. Well, run out and get me a new base. Here's $20 million.
It doesn't work that way.
Well, how does it work?
The way it works is you're going to lose.
Will my magic underwear get me out of this?
It's not that kind of magic.
Maybe I should release a photo of my boobies.
It's probably your best move, sir.
Can the Republicans do? How much hatred can they spew? It's shameless. It's shameless. It seems like the whole thing's cursed, and every year it gets worse. They're shameless. About Medicare, they pull their facts from out of thin air. It's shameless. It's shameless. So pathetic, it's not even funny. And poisoned with too much money. It's shameless. Stepped on by an elephant dance. It's shameless. It's shameless. It's shameless. It's shameless.
I'm Stone White reporting from Libya.
And I'm Chirpy News Chick, junior correspondent with a YouTube edition of The News You Can Use. Oh no! Al-Qaeda terrorists just dropped an anvil on Stone White's head. I just want to correct something. I'm Chirpy News Chick, the new senior correspondent in Libya, standing here at the place where Ambassador... Ouch! Stop it! That hurts! Not on my hair! Stop that! You're ridiculing my credibility! No, not the piano! It's too soon!
This is Stone White, reporting from my hospital bed somewhere in the Middle East, reminding all my comrades at WBAI that you should consider relocating to Cuba, you bunch of commies!
It's time for Grandma's Song, dedicated to Congressman Paul Ryan. Mocking my pain with his figures, chilling my blood with his words, killing me slowly with his plan, killing me slowly with his plan, ending my whole life with his words, killing me slowly with his plan. I heard he had a good plan. I heard he had some style. So I came to see him to listen for a while. Have been my grandson with those big blue eyes, but he was mocking my pain with his figures, chilling my blood with his words, killing me slowly with his plan, killing me slowly with his plan, ending my whole life with his words, killing me slowly with his plan. I felt all flushed with fever at what he told the crowd. 1,000 cuts to Medicare, he read each one out loud. And all the folks applauded as he took away their lives, mocking our pain with his figures, writing us off with his words, killing us slowly with his plan, killing us slowly with his plan, ending our lives with his words, killing us slowly. But you know, he spoke as if he knew me. In all my dark despair, and then he looked right through me as if I wasn't there. Oh yes, you're less than zero when you're on Ryan Care, mocking my pain, my life, killing me, little old me, with his plan, ending my life with his words, killing me slowly with his plan. That Polly's a one-man death panel.
Time for the Final Edition Radio Hour's finance feature, Money or Die. Pharmaceutical companies constantly attack the Food and Drug Administration as the embodiment of the nanny state. Above all, for its stubborn insistence on lengthy and costly clinical trials for new drugs. But Congress is listening, and Big Pharma is finally doing some damage to the worrywarts of the FDA. Fox Burnett held a round table with some of the big players in the brave new world of outsourced clinical testing.
First, the news. As of January 1st, 2013, global ratings giants Moody's and Standard & Poor's, not the FDA, will now rate the reliability of drugs the same way they rate the reliability of bonds, securities, and feckless little European countries. Heinrich von Steyman is CEO of global pharmaceutical conglomerate Merck.
At Merck, we always balance patient health with financial health. Our financial health. That's why we object to the artificial firewall of clinical trials. We don't need them. Patients don't need them. Why inflict hideous, unbearable pain in the lab on adorable puppies and monkeys, Just to give an FDA paper pusher something to do between porn breaks?
But the public has to know that drugs are safe. What's the alternative to clinical testing?
Market forces should determine a drug's success. If a drug works, doctors will prescribe it and patients will demand it, just like stocks and bonds. If it doesn't work, it will die a horrible death, as will a few patients. But we have awesome lawyers, and you can't make an omelet without killing a few unborn baby chickens. Better unborn baby chickens than adorable puppies and monkeys, no?
So how does a rating service with no expertise in the health field rate a new drug? Moody's Paul Bearer is an unindicted mortgage-backed bond rater.
Moody's will conduct its usual exhaustive review, taking into account the usual gamut of factors we look at with any financial product: a company's claims, government counterclaims, the hopes and fears of desperately sick people, and above all, the size of the product's marketing budget.
Can you give us an example?
Happy to. Our best rating is AAA. That's a big A for okay, two little A's for top of the class. Drugs rated AAA are judged to be of the finest quality and carry the smallest degree of infection risk. Patients for this drug are likely to be exceptionally stable and secure. Built-in protections may change, but such changes are unlikely to impair the fundamentally strong nature of such drugs.
Okay, what about the other end of the spectrum?
That would be drugs rated triple C. The big C for you know what, and two nasty little C's for cough, please. Drugs rated triple C should only be used in ER medical events where lack of insurance and minimal oversight by underpaid, overworked staff are significant factors. Such drugs may present elements of danger with respect to the principal patient or interested parties. Our default advice is extreme caution. And while we're talking default, adverse reactions will not be default of the manufacturer.
That's a good one. Yes.
Predictably, fuss budgets like Nancy Pelosi are raising conflict of interest issues. Ms. Ex-Speaker?
People, while we concur with our colleagues on the rabid right that outsourcing the regulatory burden of the FDA will trim the federal budget, holy Hannah, what choice do we have? There's a huge potential for financial hanky-panky. If Moody's are going to rate the efficacy of, say, your drugs, Herr von Steyman, how can they possibly continue rating Smirk stocks and securities?
We take criticism like Madam X-Speaker's very, very seriously. If she is taking any of our medications, I'd advise her to make very, very sure that the tamper-free packaging has not been tampered with.
Is that a threat?
Yes, but hopefully such measures will not be necessary. The ratings guys have thought through such issues quite carefully.
Paul Bearer?
I love Nancy. If she had her way, it wouldn't be a nanny state. It'd be a Nancy state. Frankly, I rate her concerns as triple C for crap, crap, and more crap. At Moody's, our drug rating and stock rating departments are staffed completely separately. And though they work on the same floor, they're totally forbidden to fraternize or even mingle. Fraternize, mingle, you're done at Moody's.
Reassuring. So, Herr von Stamen, will new drugs be subject to any old-fashioned testing at all?
Yes, all our drugs are thoroughly tested. Rest easy on that score, America. The FDA wants clinical trials to continue, but in our labs, on our time frame, with a slightly lower threshold of negative outcomes. So, our hugely popular anti-antidepressant Sadvil simply had to demonstrate that it did not cause violent convulsion, massive oral hemorrhaging, and death. Our new alpha blocker, Dryagra, which shrinks enlarged prostates, will only have to show it doesn't make a test subject's scrotum explode.
Moody's is currently accepting applications for new test subjects at your local emergency room. Next week on Money or Die, the new Goldman Sachs Food Administration bets big time that you can't eat all that.
We now go to CCNN, the Credico Comedy News Network. Out just in time to qualify for the 2012 Oscars, a new religious film, not produced by Mel Gibson, The Innocent of Muslims, a low-budget film that is blowing up the worldwide and is really setting the world on fire, CCNN now goes to its religious advisor, the Reverend Pat Robertson. Mr. Robertson, are you there?
How you doing there, young man?
Good, good. I just wanted to know, this film that's it's all the rage around the world. Have you seen it?
It's quite a piece of work, isn't it? It's quite a piece. I wish I could come up with something like that. We're spending so little money. It's amazing how a piece of work can be done. So it's not like the Sistine Chapel, which took a lot of time and energy. It's like one of those paintings from back in by Donizetti, whatever his name was. Get it in a couple hours, just a little graph, and the next thing you know, the whole world wants it. That's what's beautiful about this film, not to mention the great message.
And what other films would you compare it to, you being, you know, watching a lot of these type of films?
Well, I watch a lot of films. I would put it right up there with some of the classics like Birth of a Nation, you know, where they finally tell the truth about the great deeds of the Ku Klux Klan.
And
of course, Intolerance was a good film, too. And I like the one by Mrs. Wiesenthal.
Right, so I can see that you have a certain genre of films that you like to watch and review.
Hate films.
Yes, you do. Now, listen,
progressive hate films.
Now, Mr. Robinson, people have said that you've been called anti-Semitic, and we all know that's not true. But
well, I don't think it's true because I believe that these accusations of anti-Semitism are being spread by Jews.
You're probably right. Do you have any message for the Jewish people now on Yom Kippur, one of the highest holy days here?
I'd say now's a good time to convert. It's a good time to convert. Otherwise, you're going to be condemned to a life with Satan and pitchforks and all that kind of stuff. It's hot down there. Now's a good time to renounce it. You know, they tried to get them during the great period of the Inquisition, and some of the great men over there, like Torquemada, gave them all sorts of chances to be saved. And they just have not gotten the message on this day, Yom Kippur Day.
Well, listen, I quickly want to go over to the former president of the United States, George W. Bush, and ask him a quick question. Romney has said during the week that he cannot get the 47% of slackers, moochers, the working class. I mean, did you get those votes when you were running? And should Romney go after the moochers?
There's a lot of stupid people out there. You know, I think it's fine. Get the stupid people who are moochers if you vote. If you can't get them, you got to rely on techniques to voter suppression. Voter suppression. We have a democratic right. Americans who run for office, they have a democratic right to keep people from voting. Both sides do. Our side's got to be more aggressive, though.
Well, Mr. Bush, we have the UN General Assembly here in New York City, and the Prime Minister of Israel is in Benjamin.
I had a hard time getting a cab today.
You're going to. But President Benjamin Netanyahu's in town. How do you feel about him trying to influence United States Middle Eastern policy?
I like what he's doing. I like what he says. There's a lot of oil fields here in Iran. He understands it. And he's got like a hard on for Iran. So we want their oil. And I think what I would do if I were Obama, who's doing a fine job, by the way. I like what he's done. He's locked up a lot of black people. I think it's good. My stock in Progressive Corporation America has gone through the roof. God bless him. A lot of war machines that we're building in Iraq and Afghanistan. Good man. But he ought to make him Secretary of State. Benjamin, I can't say his last name, but the Jewish fellow over there in Israel, I make him Secretary of State. Let him start bombing away.
Well, he's almost acting like it now anyway. But right before we end up here, I wanted to talk to America's Mayor, Rudy Giuliani. We all know that tonight the Jewish people will be celebrating Yom Kippur. But just recently, Mayor Giuliani celebrated one of his high holy days. It's probably the biggest day on his calendar, and it's called 9/11 in some people's calendar. But Mr. Giuliani, how did you celebrate 9/11? I know it's a big day for you. It's a family day. Everyone gets together. How did you celebrate it?
Well, we started out, me and my my friend Judith Nathan, we sat around for 10 days on the 10th day of 9/11. My true love said to me, so that kind of stuff. We did sat around, talked about it for 10 days. Had a beautiful day, went around, walked around the place 100 times. Every day got some exercise, picked up some of the fine dirt from down there. I've cornered the market on the dirt, by the way. If I'd like to buy some island dirt, it's all gone. I've got it all. I had a great time, it's a beautiful time. It's like December 7th, 1941, when I was there in Honolulu. The Japanese bombed, and I got everybody together, kept things calm. It was a holy day. Both holy days coming up for me, too, December 7th.
And do you go and try to do some of the work of the Lord, maybe go to the prison, see some of the downtrodden during those high holy days of yours?
That's so in the Bible. You're supposed to go to the prison.
And did you?
I visited prison. Got a buddy named Bernie Carrick, political prisoner. Bernie Carrick, great political prisoner. Been stuck in jail for 2 years, fighting for our civil liberties. He's a great man. Then, of course, my financier, Bernie Madoff, went to see him, another political prisoner. So I've seen a couple of political prisoners. So that's it. You know, that's how I spend my days, you know, hoping to spring these two guys. There's a really, let's be honest, political prisoners.
Yes, not many people would think of them as political prisoners, but I guess you would. I mean,
well, he went on a 2-hour hunger strike, by the way, the other day.
it took him that long to get from breakfast to lunch.
Well, he did it during his sleep. He was able to go out of an 8-hour sleep, go 2 hours without eating. So it was amazing the fortitude that this man has and the resilience and the dedication as a political prisoner, Bernie Carrick. Good man.
And finally, how do you feel about fracking upstate and the pollution of the water that will be coming into New York City?
Well, I like that. I like Indian Point. I'm a lobbyist for Indian Point. It's good. Nothing like that water. Nothing like good, you know, radioactive water. In the middle of the night, you can see it. You know, they have frack everywhere. They have frack right here. Frack, even, I'm so convinced that it's a good thing to have a frack under the Freedom Tower.
And one final question there. When you were saying about you cornered the market on 9/11 dirt or dust or whatever you want to call it.
The Hunt Brothers.
But what's the measurements that you would sell that in? Is it in 20-pound bags?
Dime bags. Dime bag, nickel bags, half grams, eight balls, good old 9/11 dirt. I'd like to buy an 8-ball of 9/11 dirt.
Yeah, well, why not?
Both in prison. Somebody's monitoring this call. I took it seriously.
Well, listen, I hear the your favorite song, The Internationale. You were probably singing it to Bernie Carrick and Bernie Madoff. And that is it. Another month gone. I think
really
we'll be fun.
Today, my friend.
Oh, my God.
Go to Cuba.
I don't know. Hey.
Go to Cuba. Pat Robinson would like to say it to you. Why don't you go to Cuba?
You've been listening to the Christmas Coup Comedy Players. That's the CCCP with David Dozer, John McDonough, Scooter Otis McClay, Mike Squire, Paul Fisher, Tony Hendra, and the final edition, Stacey Davis, Mark Babawi, the Capital Steps, Jim Turr of Blue Canyon Satire, the great Will Durst, me, Janet Coleman, and Randy Credico is the 43rd President of the United States. BBC Libya was the work of Scooter and Mark Babawi. Mitt Romney Mix was created by Jim Turr of BlueCanyonSatire.com. Romney Will Say Anything, Romney Antoinette, Killing Me Slowly, and Moody's Rates Drugs was written and performed by Tony Hendra and the crew of the Final Edition, heard on the Final Edition Radio Hour, which can be heard Thursdays at 8 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network. That's PRN.org. Empty Chair, Romney's Gilligan Island, and Shameless were written and performed by Mike Squire. The Ryan, the Mitt, and the Wardrobe were written and performed by Paul Fisher, whose weekly radio show, What's the Frequency, Kenneth, can be heard on PRX.org. What Does the Middle Class Do was written and performed by the Capital Steps. The Worst Campaign Ever was written and performed by Will Durst, 5-time Emmy Award nominee, who has a new ebook, Elect to Laugh, available at RedRoom.com, Amazon, and Barnes & Noble. Raffle Drum was written by David Dozer and performed by him and Janet Coleman. MSDNC and Libya were written and performed by Scooter and Stacey Davis. The Barfly News was written and performed by Otis McClay. See you next time. Bye-bye. And one more thing. Credico Comedy News Network was written and performed by Randy Credico and John McDonough, whose latest doings can be found at hackshots.nyc.org. Bye-bye.
Corporations didn't want to pay fair wages. They didn't want to deal with unions. They didn't want to pay taxes. And so they rigged the system to essentially permit themselves to move their operations overseas, keep their money overseas, and abandon the country.
Days of Destruction, Days of Revolt with Chris Hedges. Monday, October 15th, 2012, at the New York Society for Ethical Culture, 2 West 64th Street at Central Park West, with a reception at 6 p.m., followed by a talk at 7:30. Tickets for reception include a book and the talk. The general admission is offered on a sliding scale. For more information about the Chris Hedges benefit event to support WBAI, go to WBAI.org.
Don't rush it, just calm yourself. It only gets you uptight anyway. Then you're blowing the rest of the day. The trick is just to be cool. Laugh it away. Take a look and just pass it away. You'll feel better, I swear you will. Don't let it get under your skin. The trick is just to be cool. It'll make you jump right out of your pants. Once you're caught, you'll start to dance. When you see them coming, get out of the way or blow the rest of the day.
Evans Thompson and True Story. Evans Thompson will be performing. He was a guest here at WBAI on my program, Light Show, last year sometime. This is from his CD, From the Drum, From the Drum to Solo Piano Live at the Stone, October 21st. Original Rumba, Jazz, and Bebop. For reservations, you could call 212-473-1017. We'll talk more about that in October, but right now it's 3 p.m. Stay tuned for Talkback with Hugh Hamilton.
Hallelujah.
75 degrees at 2 minutes after the hour. Very good afternoon to you. Welcome now to this Wednesday. Is it Wednesday already? That's right. Wednesday edition of the program Talk Back. Talk Back. Heard here on listener-sponsored commercial-free radio, WBAI New York. And broadcasting, at 99.5 FM. Streaming live on the web at WBAI.org. Talk Back, your gathering place for the free and fair exchange of information and ideas. Here Monday through Thursday from 3 until 5 in the afternoon. Here's the number to call if you'd like to be a part of any of the conversations we're convening today. That number is 212-209-2900. That's 212-209-2900. That's the number to call if you would like to be a part of any of the conversations that we are convening today. I'm reading now from journalist Chris Hedge's latest column titled, How Do You Take Your Poison?, in which he warns that regardless of who wins the presidential election in November, the corporatocracy is poised to carry out U.S. history's most savage assault against the poor and working class in this country. That's from journalist Chris Hedge's. The piece originally published in Truth Dig. It's available on a number of other websites, and there's a link to it as well in our on our Facebook page. You'll find us on Facebook under my name. Chris Hedges writes, we will all swallow our cup of corporate poison. We can take it from Nurse Romney, who will tell us not to whine and play the victim, or we can take it from Nurse Obama, who will assure us that this hurts him even more than it hurts us. But one way or another, the corporate hemlock will be shoved down our throats. The choice before us is how it will be administered. Corporate power, no matter who is running the ward after January 2013, is poised to carry out U.S. history's most savage assault against the poor and the working class, not to mention the Earth's ecosystem. And no one in power, no matter what the bedside manner, has any intention or ability to stop it. Hedges continues, if you insist on participating in the cash-drenched charade of the two-party Democratic election, at least be clear about what you are doing. You are, by playing your assigned role as the Democratic or Republican voter in this political theater, giving legitimacy to a corporate agenda that means your own impoverishment and disempowerment. All the things that stand between us and utter destitution, Medicaid, food stamps, Pell Grants, Head Start, Social Security, public education, federal grants and aid to America's states and cities, the Women, Infants and Children's Nutrition Program, or WIC, temporary assistance for needy families, and home-delivered meals for seniors are all about to be shredded by the corporate state. Our corporate oligarchs are harvesting the nation, grabbing as much as they can, as fast as they can, in the inevitable descent. That from Chris Hedges, journalist, his latest column, originally published at truthdig.com, available at a number of other websites, including Common Dreams, and there's a link to it on our Facebook page. Now, I'm hoping that you will join me on Monday, October 15th, for an evening with Chris Hedges, in which we're titling that evening Days of Destruction, Days of Revolt, which also happens to be the title of Hedges' latest book, about which I interviewed him quite extensively a couple of months ago. So I'm going to be hosting this evening with Chris Hedges on Monday, October 15th. It's going to be at the New York Society for Ethical Culture. They're located at 2 West 64th Street at Central Park West here in New York City. You should go to our website, WBAI.org, for more information and to purchase your tickets. I'm hoping that you'll get your tickets early. There's a sliding scale for students and seniors and people who are financially challenged and so on. The basic admission is $30 for the talk, which is going to be followed by a Q&A, but the sliding scale would allow you to get your tickets for as little as $20. You'll figure out how to do that once you check it out online at WBAI.org. Now, there's a reception that will precede the talk and the Q&A, and that reception, a meet and greet with Chris Hedges, including a copy of Chris Hedges' latest book, Days of Destruction, Days of Revolt. There's a $90, we're asking for a $90 contribution, a tax-deductible contribution to WBAI to be a part of that reception, which begins at 6 p.m. So the reception at 6 p.m., followed by the talk and the Q&A at 7:30, and you'll get more information. Visit our website, WBAI.org. I shall be hosting the evening, and I certainly look forward, as does Chris Hedges, we certainly both look forward to seeing you there. And speaking about the corporate assault on the poor and working class in America, Forbes magazine calls its list of the 400 richest Americans the definitive scorecard of wealth in America. But a new report just out this week from United for a Fair Economy says that the magazine is misleading the American people. The report is titled Born on Third Base, What the Forbes 400 Really Says About Wealth and Opportunity in America. And it examines the sources of wealth from members of the Forbes 400 and uncovers the role of inheritance and privilege in economic mobility in this country. The report urges Forbes to stop glamorizing the myth of the so-called self-made man while minimizing the other factors in wealth accumulation, factors including tax policies, birthright, gender, and of course race. For example, the report finds that 40% of the Forbes 400 list inherited a sizable asset from a family member or spouse, and over 20% inherited sufficient wealth to make the list. In addition, 17% of the Forbes 400 have family members on the list. The report also explains that the net worth of the Forbes 400 grew 15-fold between the launch of the list in 1982 and last year, 2011, where at the same time during that very period, wealth stagnated for the average American household. Get this, in 1982, the wealth threshold, in order to be on the Forbes 400 list, you had to have $75 million. That was the minimum in 1982. Today, every single member of that list, that Fortune 400, Fortune 400? Yes, that's what it is. The 400 richest Americans, every single one of them is a billionaire. At the top of our second hour today, we'll talk with Tim Sullivan, who is a co-author of this new report, and he's also the federal policy coordinator over at United for a Fair Economy. Now, later this hour, we'll continue our analysis of President Barack Obama's address to world leaders attending this week's General Assembly of the United Nations here in New York. As you know, he's had plenty to say about the past over Iran's nuclear program, the recent proliferation of anti-American protests in much of the Middle East, North Africa, and elsewhere in the Muslim world, and the continuing fallout from the so-called Arab Spring. We touched on much of that yesterday with Jamal Abdi of the National Iranian American Council and Professor Gara Talhami, a scholar of both North Africa and the Middle East. But President Obama's speech yesterday was also notable for a number of conspicuous omissions, among them any substantive discussion of developments in sub-Saharan Africa. And where the region did manage to get some sort of honorable mention, it was of such a generalized nature as to be virtually meaningless. So we've invited Africa scholar and policy analyst Nii Akwete to join us later this hour to fill in the blanks in yesterday's presidential address. But first, can black media, and more particularly black radio, be saved? You recall that just over a month ago, we spoke with veteran broadcaster and community activist Bob Law about the corporate assault on black radio and the fact that black-owned radio was facing a future of virtual extinction in New York City unless something urgent was done to stop the bleeding. Law took the matter into his own hands and convened a historic public hearing in Harlem on the status and future of black radio in the city. Billed as the first hearing of its kind anywhere in the country, the event was attended by people throughout the tri-state area and from as far afield as Pennsylvania, who presented some 3 hours of sworn testimony on the issue. The testimony is being forwarded to the Federal Communications Commission as the commission considers license transfers throughout the nation that, unless carefully monitored, could have a devastating impact on the little that's left of black radio in this country. But the fight is far from over. So we invited Bob Law to join us again today for an update on the struggle to save black radio in New York City and what you can do to help. Good afternoon, Mr. Bob Law.
Well, good afternoon. I'm glad to be with you.
Oh, you are very welcome. Welcome back to the program. There's been a lot of coverage about that hearing, a very significant hearing, very well attended. Tell me about what happened there. Tell me what happened there in Harlem.
And it was well attended, and a great many of the people who came are people who heard about it on WBAI, which kind of speaks to the point that we are trying to make about the need for media, the need for diversity of opinion and ideas, information. The media that is controlled, even the black media, WBLS, WLIB, WWRL, even the black media would not mention it, would not talk about it, out of their own fear of being punished by advertisers that they don't